This is the Ed Milet Show.
Welcome back to Max Out with Ed Milet. This gentleman to my left does not need any introduction, but I'm going to give him one anyway. This is NFL Hall of Famer, only man in the history of the NFL with 70 rushing touchdowns and 30 receiving touchdowns in the history of the league, this man right here. So this is the great Marshall Faulk joining me here today. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
It's really, really a blessing. So I knew who you were before the rest of the world does. And when I tell you this story, I don't want to tell you off camera, you're going to know right away what I'm talking about. I went to college at University of the Pacific. You know what I'm about to tell you?
Yes.
So
I made your school famous.
Yeah, you became famous because of my school, actually, is how the way I look at it. Mm-hmm. So just so you all know, I knew who this man was before the whole world did, really, in football. I played baseball at University of the Pacific, and my sophomore year, they asked me to come play football because our corner got hurt. And luckily, I pulled a hamstring that week, so I sat on the sidelines and watched this guy enter the game. Let me tell you what happened, okay? First off, he wasn't even the starting running back that day, right? You weren't even the starter?
No.
He's not the starter. This man ends up getting in the game. It goes 37 rushes for 300, make sure you get this right, 386 yards. Did you just hear what I said? 37 rushes, 386 yards, 7 touchdowns, and was responsible for 44 points in this football game.
Yeah.
Do you remember that game?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. My God.
I cannot forget it.
And so at that point, I went, A, I'm not playing football because I don't relate to that at all, and B, I just watched one of the greatest football players of all time way back when. And that was really the beginning, kind of, wasn't it, for you?
That was the start of everything.
It was. That game was.
Yeah. Yeah, that game was it was like hello world for me.
Yeah.
And people always ask me, like, man, could you envision yourself? You don't have those kinds of dreams. You have dreams of being successful, but to that degree, you can never fathom or think in your head that that's going to happen. But I always tell people I was prepared for it, though.
What do you mean by that?
I was prepared. The work that I put in, making sure I knew I was the backup. And as the backup, I got a senior playing in front of me. Mm. He was all conference. The chances of me playing,
right,
slim to none.
Yeah.
The week before, I got like 2 snaps.
Is that right?
and then, you know, second week of the season, he goes down and I'm in the game, and coach looks at me and he's like, you just hold on to this football. You think about all the film work that I put in, just wanting to make sure that if I do get in, I know what I'm doing, I know what I'm supposed to do, that I'm not going to let the other 10 guys in the huddle down. And, you know, that's the work that goes in. And the opportunity presented itself, I'm just glad I was prepared.
You talk about taking advantage, because I think in every career that's true. I mean,
yeah.
What if you don't? If you think about it, what if you don't perform today? What if you put a couple on the ground that day, right? I mean, it's possible you never even see the football field again. It's possible. So it's true for all of you, like even starting out the interview, there's going to be times in your career and chasing your dream where there's going to be a moment.
Oh, yeah.
And those moments are few and far between. And when they arrive, you need to be prepared for them, because that was the hello world. I mean, I'm telling you, I've been to a lot of sporting events in my life. I've never seen an athlete dominate other athletes in my damn life like I did that day. And I knew after that point, I better keep an eye on this guy. So before you get there, though, before you become an NFL Hall of Famer and one of the, you know, arguably the best football player I've ever seen, right? And guys that I know that were in the league will tell me that often. The best football player I've ever seen is Marshall Faulk. And so, but you go to San Diego State.
Right.
So you obviously had to be a great high school player, but how do you only end up at San Diego State? And I don't mean to put down San Diego State.
No, it's a great school. No.
But this isn't USC running back university, right? So how come you end up at San Diego State and not one of these big schools?
It was a combination of back then, they didn't label – you were only labeled to a position. If you're a running back, you're a running back. If you play defensive back, you play defensive back. Okay. You play receiver, you play receiver. They didn't have this thing called the athlete. Mm. And in high school, I played quarterback, receiver, tight end, corner, safety. I kicked, I punted.
Oh my gosh.
I returned kicks, I returned punts.
Oh my God.
I kicked field goals. I held for the field goal
Come
kicker.
On, really? Did you really?
I did everything.
Wow.
I did everything. And my football coach, my high school football coach. Exactly.
Yeah.
He built football players.
Yeah.
We were in a big school. Hmm. But we were the smallest school in the biggest division.
Okay.
And we didn't have I played whole games in high school.
Literally every snap on both sides.
When I got on the field,
yeah,
I didn't come off until halftime.
That's amazing.
I played offense, defense. Huh. I was on every special team.
Oh, my gosh.
I never left the field.
Huh. Do you think that had something to do with the way you played in the NFL? Because you were
one
of the, you were really kind of that new breed of, like, a complete football player at running back. You blocked well. You understood the blocking schemes. You were a great receiver, right? Obviously a great runner, too. Do you think that had something to do with
it? A lot to do with it.
Yeah.
I became the why are we doing that? What is that?
Yep.
I want to do that. Mm. And my coaches, early in my career, they didn't like it.
Okay.
Coaches don't like explaining why. Hey, we're going to do this play. Hey, coach, why we're doing that? I watched the film. They do this, this, and this.
Mm.
They look at you like,
yeah.
You couldn't appreciate the fact that I was watching film on my own.
You were.
You know, so at a young age.
Did you really? I've been a young.
Yes. Yeah.
You've always been a student of it.
Just, I love football.
Mm.
And there's only one way to get better.
Yeah.
And everything that I did, I went home, I watched film.
Really?
I watch practice. We watch practice, and I go home. I watch practice.
You did.
Yeah,
and that's not.
It's the only way to get better.
Is that? And that's the only way to get better in anything, right?
Yes.
To do that, but is that a separator? That's what I wanted to ask you. So you get to the NFL. By the way, I remember Mike Martz saying literally their goal in football. It was almost like a basketball player, like LeBron. You want to get him as many touches as you can. You're really one of the first football players I ever saw where the coordinator literally said, we need to get him X amount of touches a football game. And is that part of that? It's because of your preparation too?
It was, Mike felt if they tried to get me to, as much, he could get me the ball as much as possible.
Yes.
And when they couldn't get it to me, if they showed me as a, like, I'm the primary and I attract
coverage.
Attention,
yep.
There's a lot of one-on-ones.
Yep.
Isaac Bruce is going to win. Torrey Holt, they're going to win the majority of the battles of the one-on-one.
Yep.
As soon as they get me to draw the attention to my position.
It's a totally different way of using a running back in that time, right?
It's
still not all that common. I mean, it's still not that common, but you were certainly
teams,
the first.
Some teams, Pittsburgh, they do it with Le'Veon Bell. Buffalo, they do it with LeSean McCoy.
Yeah.
Dallas do it with Zeke.
That's true.
They get him involved in the passing game. Maybe not as much as lining up as a wide receiver as I did, but they get him involved. And here's the reason. In football, the minute you break a huddle, running back, you think he wants to run the football.
Right.
If you run a swing route and they throw you the ball, the big 300 pounders that they have in the middle of the football field.
Right.
You just got me away from them.
right. Yeah.
And there's the advantage. Now you got a 180-pound, 190-pound cornerback who really doesn't like the tackle.
Right, he didn't want to tackle.
You gotta tackle me one-on-one.
That's awesome. I get that. But you got that. See, I think you're one of the first players I saw, and I love football. Obviously, I don't know anything about it compared to you, but I would read that this man knew what everyone on the offense's responsibilities were. You knew what the guards was, the tackles was, what route the receiver was running. And I think that helped you get in space too, didn't it? I mean, that's they trusted you getting the football for those reasons.
Understanding the game, you know, and I took it to the quarterback level. I don't want to call it, it's the quarterback level.
Yeah.
And this is what I tell people. A lot of, you know, I watch, I have friends who work in Hollywood and, you know, let's say you get a script. Mm. What if you only know your line?
Yeah.
How are you going to know when their line is done? Yeah. So you have to learn the whole script.
Yeah.
You understand the principles and what you're trying to accomplish.
Do you think that was that's a good point. Was that, I always wanted to know, when you get to an elite level, because a lot of people that watch this, whatever they're in, they could be in business and fitness and any sport, they're at a pretty elite level. And then how do you separate? Because we were talking about before, you ran a 4.35, 40, that's fast. But there are other guys in the league who ran 4.4s.
Yeah.
What's the separator? Is it preparation? Like, what's the separator at the elite level in sports or business in your mind? What's that little inch, that difference?
Preparation, mental toughness, and understanding that when you come into the game, your skill level is here and your knowledge is here. Mm. And they're going to intersect to where, like you're – you're playing, and then they're going to pass each other, where your skill level goes down and your knowledge of the game goes up. The faster you can raise your knowledge, the longer time you're going to have to be as good as you are physically and as smart as you can be mentally.
Hmm.
That's the elite. The elite players, they're up here a long time.
Wow.
The Kobe Bryants, Kobe was like, once he got it and understood the game, he was able to slow down the deterioration of his body.
I got you. Do you think that's
happened? But yet he continued to grow.
Do you see that in a guy like Brady a little bit?
Yes, without a doubt. Yeah. Like Tom is, he's fighting Father Time.
Yeah.
You know, that's why crazy diets, all these workouts, all the stuff that he does, because he understands mentally, this dude is maxed out. I mean, he knows everything. You might be able to trick him once, but you're not going to trick him all game.
And he
understands the only thing that's keeping him back now is age.
Age.
So he's trying to slow it down.
Yeah. And so his preparation is physical preparation, not diet preparation. It's that little separate.
All of that stuff. Anything to slow down the aging process of his body so he can remain at that peak.
That's crazy. And I watched that. I'm curious. It's a football question about that. I've just always wanted to know. You played with Peyton when he was young, right? And then you played with Kurt Warner.
Uh-huh.
I'm curious, what were the similar two great football players? You caught Peyton earlier in his career, but of those two guys, just out of curiosity, what are the similarities and what was different about the two of them?
Both of them, they have unbelievable leadership skills, and they're committed to doing things the right way.
What do you mean by leadership skills? Like specifically, like what's that look like a little bit?
They know that each player requires a different type of encouragement.
Huh. You don't treat everybody the same?
No.
Yeah, some dudes you can lay on and get on.
Whether it was Peyton or Kurt, we'd have conversations, and they knew the conversation with me had to be intellectually about how we're going to pick up the blitz, what we're going to do, these adjustments. He'd go to the tight end, and he'd say, so when I do this, where would you like to be? You know, do you need me to let your motion go a little wider so you can hook the end? It's all about encouraging people, letting them know you understand what their job is and that you are out to help them do their job better.
Got you.
Because let's be honest, the five guys that protect the quarterback, you only hear their name or number if they hold.
That's up. Right.
When they score a touchdown, they never say, number 71.
That's so true.
That yellow flag come out holding, number 71. So when you take them to dinner, you invite them to your house.
Yeah.
Peyton, Kurt, let's sit down and watch film with the offensive line.
Yeah, yeah. Did you ever do anything for your offensive line?
Oh, yeah. Dinners, bought them stuff. And here's the reality. When you do things for those guys, this is how I know when guys are taking care of their offensive line. Mm-hmm. Quarterback on his back. Running back on his back, they're there to pick you up.
Pick it up, yeah.
Cleaning guys off.
It is kind of telling.
They keep you clean.
It is telling sometimes when you see that not happen. When you see it not happen, you're like, wow, what's going on in that football?
I told people this. I was like, I watched the Washington Redskins. I couldn't figure out why they wouldn't give Kirk Cousins the big deal.
Yeah.
And then they moved on. Offensive line never helped them up. You never heard a teammate saying, we need to pay him, we need to keep him. Yeah. Something was wrong.
Well, you just knew it from being
Something was wrong. And I don't know Kurt personally.
Yeah.
But if I did and I was in his circle, I'd tell him, you got to work on your leadership skills.
And you got a fresh start this time, so you better clean it up this time.
You got to work on your leadership skills.
That's awesome. What a great insight. So I'm curious, a couple more football things. You played on great teams. You've won Super Bowl, right? I was at that Super Bowl, by the way. You probably enjoyed it a little bit more than I did, but you also were on teams that weren't great.
Yeah.
Do you know? Like, you're in camp, you're like, we don't have it. Or does every camp, does everyone go, we're going to win the damn Super Bowl this year? Or is there a point where you're on a good football, you knew you were the greatest show on turf compared to a team that won five games? Do you know, or do you not know until the season reveals itself?
Every team at the start of the season, they are playing their best players.
Yeah.
And you feel like you have a chance of winning every game. The special teams, there's just something different.
Okay.
The start of the season on teams when we went 3-13 or 13-3, it was the same.
It is, okay.
It was the things that happened throughout the season. I hurt my knee, I go down, my backup comes in and scores 3 touchdowns. You know what? Thanks for being ready.
Yeah.
Kurt Warner goes down. The backup comes in.
Yeah.
Trent Green throws a couple of touchdowns. We win a couple of games. Kurt don't play. Those are the kind of things.
Little things.
It's not as much the players the 22 guys that start. It's the guys behind them. Because every team you're going to have bumps in the roads. You're going to have roadblocks. There's going to be obstacles.
Yes.
And you can't expect those 22 guys to solve every problem.
That's interesting because I'm a Patriot fan. And every offseason like this, I watch they lose these guys, you know, and I'm like, but it seems to me that they understand building that back end of their roster too because that's going to be part of the football season. You're just going to have attrition during the football season,
right?
You
have to.
So I'm curious, let's talk about Super Bowl just real quick. Is that the highlight of your career? We're going to talk about the big highlight at the end here in the Hall of Fame, but I'm curious, what's that feel like after all that work? You'd been playing a while too, right? And what was that like? And then compare it for me to the one against New England.
I played football, basketball, baseball, ran track, and had been a champion at everything other than football. I never won a championship in football.
You're kidding me.
So the dream as a kid, we growing up, always, me and my friends, we ended the day when it was time to go home, this play is for the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You were on
yeah.
offense or defense. And I never got a chance to experience that. Not only did I get a chance to experience it, it came down to this play.
One play. One yard or whatever, right? Yeah.
I mean, I could have retired. I could have retired after that game. I had to refocus, set some new goals.
Okay.
Because I was playing for that. I didn't need to win multiple. It wasn't about I want to win three or four and beat it. No. I have a childhood dream.
Wow.
I'm playing this game because I want to win a Super Bowl.
Wow.
I want that dream to come through. It came through.
That's amazing. And does that stick with you more? I'm curious. Like every day you're walking around, you're Marshall Faulk. Everybody knows you. You got your post-football life now. Does that stick with you more? And I don't mean to rub it in, but I'm curious. Does that stick with you more than the loss?
I'm a glass half full kind of guy.
You are.
So anytime, football is a joy to me.
Hmm.
And the many Patriot fans out there, they think I hate the Patriots, and they have no idea my relationship with Tom Brady, my relationship with Mr. Kraft, how I respect him. Just so you know, I know you got a lot of Patriots fans. I was the first player ever that Mr. Kraft sat down and talked to when he became the owner of the team.
You're kidding?
It was my draft year. They flew me in.
Kidding.
Man, you're a great
Patriot.
We had an awesome lunch.
Yeah.
We went to dinner that night. Good. I met his family.
Wow. Okay.
Got to meet his wife, who's an awesome woman.
That's awesome.
And he and I, we've always, there's just a respect when we talk about it.
Sure.
And he says to me, if I wouldn't have let Bill make the decision, you would have been with the Patriots.
What an amazing damn Patriot player.
Bill just
the way
wasn't
they use
into
running backs? Come on.
Bill wasn't into it, but it was Parcells at the time.
Right,
he wasn't
it was
into
Parcells.
Wasn't
right.
into drafting
right.
running backs, didn't right. like California players.
Is that right?
If you just look at
he doesn't go those he goes yeah, East Coast.
Offensive players. If
gotcha.
He was draft defensive guy, but never really, you know, liked California players who played offense. But anyways, that is my relationship. Actually, just last spring, I was one of the players, one of the Hall of Famers who went with Mr. Kraft to Israel.
Oh, wow.
That's important
for everybody to know.
I love and respect.
That's
but
awesome.
I have a duty on television. Vision. My job is I'm anti-patriot.
Right.
So so I play my role.
You play the role.
There's a role. TV, there's a role. That's my job. I play that role. I poke holes in everything that they do.
Yes.
But understand that I respect everything that Mr. Kraft, Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, what they've built.
That's wonderful.
I mean, it's the model now
and
what you want to do and how you want things to happen.
Wonderful. And about segue that a little bit into broadcasting. You're my favorite guy on TV.
Oh,
I'm not saying because you're here either. I'm saying that because, and I think of other analysts, this is true. I've watched the NFL Network and they'll literally say they enjoy being in the green room with you off camera, everybody, just so you know. This is true, isn't it? The other guys at the network will say they've enjoyed, and other places you broadcast and will continue to broadcast, but they'll say they enjoy being in the green. They love watching football with you because of your mind about the game. Other players say that. You know that. I say it. You wouldn't say it. And so is the same preparation for you now going to doing the broadcasting stuff as it did playing? And
very,
is that why you're so
very
prepared?
Similar.
Really?
Very
you
similar.
You still watch film even?
Yep.
You do?
Yeah. I mean, I enjoy it.
Wow. You love the football game.
Yeah. It's just a part of, you know, If the NFL Network right now, if there's a game on, they show like classic games or whatever, I'm gonna watch that game.
You do
as if I hadn't seen it before,
whether you played in it or not.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
It's all teaching moments. You know, people don't understand. Like they think, okay, they just draw up plays and go play.
Yeah,
there's a whole strategy before you play the game, and then once you start the game,
there's adjustments.
You have a plan. I have a plan. Somebody's plan is not working.
Mm. Yes, right?
All right?
Right.
Now, when your plan is not working, what are you going to do?
Right.
And then I have to decide, is that enough to get me out of my game plan?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And then if you get me out of my game plan, do I show what I'm going to do versus this? Mm. Because I might have a divisional opponent next week.
Wow.
I mean, there's so much that goes into it.
Yeah.
That's why when you get to the playoffs and you don't know if you're going to play the next week, you're all in.
Everything's in then.
Everything's in play.
So guys will actually not reveal things in particular weeks because of who they're playing. That's fascinating. What do you, I'm curious, and we're going to shift into business in a second, but I'm curious, what do you miss about playing? Because like just right now talking to you, camera went on, all of a sudden we started talking about football, like your face changed. So you know, like you're lit up. I can feel your intensity, right? So what do you miss most about it?
The locker room.
You do.
The camaraderie.
Guys say that a lot.
I don't care what we do as a civilian. When you're not playing a team sport, you can never get that feeling. At the country club, we're not sitting around.
Yeah.
And our boxers talking about, like, we're not in the hot tub, we're not in the jacuzzi, in the steam room piled all in, talking about this week's opponent. We're not doing that. Mm. We're not sharing stories of what happened last night or your kid took his first steps and I'm proud you were as a father. You don't have that intimate setting to really conjugate as men. We don't have that. Women, they somehow get it.
They find a way.
We don't have that.
That's it. It's the locker
room. And you only get it in team sports.
Wow. That is. And team business, too, by the way. Some of you are building team business. You get something similar to that. One last football question. What don't you miss? Is it how you feel Mondays? Or what do you not miss about playing football? I've had guys tell me Mondays, like I rent for a running back, I've been through, 30 car accidents.
Yeah, I didn't play that way. I never was out to prove that I was more macho than anybody else. I wanted to do my job. Mm. And if I got my job done and I didn't have a headache, fine.
Really?
So, but what don't I miss?
Yeah. You love it. Look at you.
I'm just thinking, I mean, cause I probably, there's the work, losing. I'll be honest.
Losing.
I'm thinking about it because you put so much work into it.
Yeah.
And I know it's not war, but blood, sweat, and tears are out there.
Yep.
And when those 60 minutes are up and you lost.
Yeah.
It's a miserable feeling. It's an awful feeling.
Yeah. For the great ones, it is. I think we both played with guys who didn't bother quite as much.
Some guys were in it for the job. It was a job for them.
Yeah. I'm fascinated by getting in the mind of a champion, of a Hall of Famer. And so the last football part, it's fascinating for me. Like, because you do this stuff reflexively. This is who you are. But not everybody's this way. People need to learn these things, and oftentimes. Now you're a member, though, of the greatest team, right? There's something really special becoming a Hall of Famer. What was that like? Like the call and being a part of that group now for forever. Down in history, someday your great grandchildren are going to be part of that legacy that you're in the Hall of Fame in the NFL. So what's that feel like?
It was, and it still is surreal. I'm a football junkie.
Yeah, you are.
Part of my story is being from New Orleans, poor, not being able to ever see a pro game. By buying a ticket, I paid, at the age of 13, 14, 15, and 16, I would hustle up to get $5, $10, whatever it was, the price increased. You had to pay that to get your rack to sell your popcorn or your peanuts. That's how I got to watch games.
Wow.
So I'm a football junkie.
Yeah.
Respect the game, love the game.
You do.
Appreciate everything that was done by the guys who was before us, who made the game what it is, so we can have the lives that we have. Mm. People don't understand, they had summer jobs. Mm. They sometimes worked during the season. After practice, they had to go to work. Mm. It was totally different than the game that we play now and how we have it.
Yeah.
And I get an opportunity to see these men don a yellow jacket and call myself a Hall of Famer. I have a number, just like they have a number. Mm. And I get to call them teammates. I get to call them friends. I get to socialize. I get to sit down next to Tony Dorsett.
Yeah.
And just.
It must be.
How you doing? How's it going? when you think about it, I grew up with Barry Sanders and Emmitt Smith, Eric Dickerson.
Yeah.
I grew up idolizing these guys.
Now you're on the same team
as them. And now, they talk to me like we're friends. We're like, you know how cool this is.
That's awesome.
You know, and that's the reality of being a part. They embrace me. They you know, they take you under their wing, they tell you, hey, young fella, you gotta take care of yourself when you get old.
Right.
You know
what I'm saying?
They advise you of things, and it's, you know, I have five older brothers. Mm. It's so different.
Yeah.
The advice and being a part of that. And having the opportunity to just rub elbows with those guys,
that's
man.
Wonderful,
I sit around and listen to the stories.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And we have that week, that Hall of Fame week. It's unbelievable when we welcome the new guys in, but to hear the older guys talk. And actually, last year, July was my first time getting to speak at the Nischke luncheon.
Hmm.
I got to speak.
Hmm.
I mean, it's like, you know, Willie Lanier was like, hey, Marshall, you know, tell us about your experience. I'm like, oh, my God.
Really?
I get to tell the group about my experience.
Oh, that's so
cool. It's, you know, it's just fascinating.
Mm.
And now for me, you know, I was part of the new wave that came in 2011. And now a bunch of the guys that's coming in are guys that I played against.
Yes.
Brian Urlacher.
Yeah.
You know, Derek Brooks came in last year. I'm like, it's so cool now. Not only is it guys that I looked up to, but now it's guys that I competed against.
How wonderful is that?
It's awesome.
That's awesome. I'm having Terrell Owens on my show in a few weeks, and I'm going to play him this clip so that he can see this. It's so good for me, just so you know, because obviously my generation, you're a hero of mine, just to see how grateful you are. I don't think all people give themselves the gift of gratitude. Like, you're grateful for all this.
I asked
you what it's like to be like. You could have given me a million answers. Your answer was gratitude. You know, and that's just wonderful.
It is, man.
That's so wonderful.
It's the reason we have the game that we have.
Awesome. I love your passion. I'm so grateful that you're doing this. Man, that just struck me because I didn't know that would be what you would answer. So that's just so powerful. I want to segue a little bit into your work because of a Hall of Famer. You're real passionate about these former players, like not only the ones that are on your team now in the Hall of Fame, but also you're doing some work now that you're passionate about, both for inner cities when it comes to the financial services business a little bit, and then also you're partnered with a couple of my colleagues, with Hannah and Bobby at our firm, and also you're really working with former players, and I know you got a passion for inner city stuff, so talk a little bit, how'd you step into this, into the financial sector, so to speak?
You know, I've always... I go back to my college days. I was interning in the public relations office for the San Diego Padres.
Huh.
And at the time, the San Diego Padres and the San Diego Chargers shared the stadium together.
Okay.
And I got to meet Junior Seau.
Okay.
And Junior said to me, you know, whatever you do, you're going to be a great player. Just remember, this community, give back.
Hmm.
And I was like, okay, whatever.
Right.
And then I watched what he did with his foundation in San Diego and how, you know, he went back to Oceanside and not just Oceanside, but all of San Diego.
Hmm.
His thing was uplifting people.
Yeah.
You know, reaching that hand out, trying to make sure other people had an opportunity. Hmm. And for me, you know, that became kind of my thing. Philanthropy. I wanted to, my rookie year, I did a football camp, 1994. We did a football camp, we raised money, gave the money to the Boys and Girls Club, started from there. Then I started doing golf tournaments, then we traveled to the Super Bowl to do golf tournaments and provide experiences, and my foundation started to grow, and I wanted to give back.
That's
awesome. and have inner city kids like myself who was not exposed to much.
Yeah.
Just so they can see there's more to life than what's on the street corner.
Wonderful.
Than drugs, gangs, affiliations with bad things. You know, there's other things out there.
Mm.
And we figured out if you expose them, if you show them college, they're going to want college.
Mm.
You know, if you show them this beach, they're going to try to get to this beach.
Yeah,
they're going to try to get back to it.
Yeah.
And those are things that sometimes as adults we don't understand.
Yeah.
Kids, they sometimes need to be shown the dream.
You're right.
So they can dream, so they then have a blueprint to follow.
That's so true. I mean, if you're living in a nightmare all the time, you're not about dreaming about things all the time,
that's it.
Right? Yeah,
that's it.
It's very
you know,
true.
It's nightmares, it's not dreams.
Yeah.
Your dream is you got shot. Your dream is your house got robbed. Your dream is you got
survive.
Kidnapped. Yeah, exactly.
There's a big leap between survival and actually chasing a dream. And so I think it's wonderful. What about the former players? Like, you know, I've had a lot of guys on. It's something I noticed too, just from a career standpoint or a life standpoint. I know you're passionate about even former players too. Yeah. Like, what are you doing with those guys, and how are you helping them?
Well, we I do as much as possible with any type of fundraising that goes on for former players, any way that we can help. Mm. And my newest partnership, obviously, you know, with WFG and what they do, but Maturity Financial Partners, we've kind of signed on the deal with the NFL alumni to kind of bring them the services that we offer, to give them an opportunity to see what, and it's crazy, but what having financial freedom is all about, and having a financial education and understanding all the things that are out there for you, all the different tax laws, all the different loopholes that if you don't have enough money and you can't go to Goldman Sachs and stuff like that, you're not going to understand. Yep. Well, we've provided techniques and tools for them to use, and it doesn't matter what your level of wealth is, what your level of income is. Yep. If you want to leave a legacy for your family, for your kids, we can help you create that. It doesn't matter how much you make.
Yes.
You know, it's about how much you put away and how smart you are with what you make.
That's so true. I'm amazed at you. Like, I don't have met an athlete who's able to speak on so many different things in such no, really. I mean, seriously, when it comes to, we were talking about golf before the interview, football, business, life, and I'm really excited that we're partnering with you on this stuff too. I think it's wonderful, and I love your heart, brother. Like, I love people who pay it forward, because you've had a blessed life. You've worked really hard for it. But it's this gratitude that you have. It's such an important emotion that we all have. I love what you've talked about being a separator. I want to be curious, because there's a lot of young people that watch my stuff. They look up to you, obviously, and we've just got a few minutes left. But I would mess up if I didn't give you a chance to, like, address young people, because you're talking about inner city kids as well. So let's say one of these kids, no matter who's watching this, they got out of that nightmare and they got a dream. It's to play in the NFL. It's to be an astronaut. It's to be a successful businesswoman, whatever it is. What advice would you give a young person who wants to chase their dream? What counsel would you give them about it?
I mean, it's chasing a dream is easy. It's your dream. The stupid thing is to not chase it, because you own it. But I just encourage them to always look back, try to help others, and try to help others get ahead. Be careful of the people who want to take advantage of you, and only do the things that you're passionate about. Don't do them because they're popular.
Man, that is the thing I got from you when we were off camera and we were on, is I think sometimes I discount people that are great at something, that their passion for it. Like, you love football.
I love it.
I actually think you love to compete.
Oh, without a doubt.
I think it's like, I think if we're playing golf, I mean, all of a sudden I saw your face change, we're talking golf. I talk about golf like it's fun. You talk about golf like, hey, I'm not playing around with this. Hey,
you and I, we're competing right now. Right. I just want to make sure that I'm better than you on your podcast. You don't know that, but I just want you to know.
Well, I wish you the best of luck on that. No, I enjoyed today so much, my friend. Seriously, we went. I want to go longer, but we went as long as I'm permitted to go, because I want to be respectful of your time and everybody else's time here. This is how a Hall of Famer thinks. But more importantly, everybody, this is how a Hall of Fame person acts and conducts their life. They're grateful, they give back, they pay it forward, and they're humble about all of their successes. So from all the way back to you kicking the heck out of UOP in 1991.
You got your revenge at the Super Bowl with the Patriots.
I did get a little bit.
There you go. There you go.
I went on that team. But what I got was, I got to make a dream come true of mine, which was meeting you today.
Oh, man.
And spending some time. And I'm excited about our new partnership together. And I want to thank you so much for today. Everyone out there, you know, I bring these unbelievable people to you for free. Here's all I ask, right? It's free. Just give myself and the podcast a nice review on iTunes or a comment here on YouTube. Say some great things about us. And please continue to follow Marshall Faulk and the progress he's having in his career. Max out, everybody. God bless you.
This is the Ed Milet Show.